Imagine a new kind of investing, a potentially life-changing way to invest that honors biblical principles, the kind of principles that you and I grew up with. Since 1994, Timothy Plan has made biblically responsible investing possible, offering mutual funds and ETFs that are filtered for biblical principles. Don't compromise your values. Invest with Timothy Plan. Ask your financial advisor or call Timothy Plan at 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Again, that's 1-800-846-7526 and discover what it means to be a biblically responsible investor. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider a fund's investment objective, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners, LTD, and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC. As a paid testimonial, there is no guarantee of future performance, and each experience will differ. Hey there, welcome to another Memo Pod. Great to have you, and glad you made time for us here. Listen, those of you that are watching the Memo Pod, I appreciate you, and you can always submit your comments either below the video, in the email, however you want to do it. Those of you that are listening to the audio of the podcast, we have started something that we have done before because there's apparently some sort of snafu with Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Spotify and all of that stuff. So I'm using not just the Substack way to push it out, which is what you've been typically getting, but we've also done this thing that we used to do back when it was the Heck Podcast years ago, and we're using that same formula to distribute the podcast weekly that way as well. So hopefully if it was automatically downloading to your device and it's not now, hopefully last week and this week it's going to start doing that again. So let me know if that continues to be a problem or an issue, and we'll get it figured out. I don't have a tech team, and basically my tech team is turning to my high school students and saying, all right, help me figure this out. So if I need to do that, then you got to let me know. All right. But anyway, thanks for being here for the podcast. Listen, a couple things. First of all, in the second half of the podcast today, because I always like to let you know, especially those of you who are free subscribers, I know that there are times that certain things we're going to talk about, you're going to want to be in on. And so I do want you to know what we're talking about, so that if it's something that you feel like you want your voice to be heard on, you want to comment, you want to share with the group, which as you hopefully know, this whole group is about iron sharpening iron and sharing thoughts and ideas and our views on things, as well as obviously commenting on what I've had to say about it. But anyway, I feel like some of you may want to join in on some of these conversations, so I want you to know. It's not really to be obnoxious and say, hey, look at what you're missing out on. But if that happens, I'm okay with it. Anyway, so in the second half for our paid subscribers of the Memo Pod today, Alistair Begg, who's a Reformed Baptist minister. I don't preach Reformed theology or I share many similarities with it. I'm not a Baptist, but I have a great deal of respect for Alistair Begg. I love learning the Bible from Alistair Begg and a number of ministers that I really enjoy hearing, and he's certainly one of them. And his, obviously, a lot of these key ministers, well-known ministers, they've got a sermon or two that just stick out and everybody knows it. And you know Alistair Begg, the man on the middle cross. I mean, that to me is just one of the greatest. Still, when I watch it, I get chills every time I think about it. Anyway, but Alistair Begg gave some advice on a podcast to a Christian grandmother who was wondering, should I go to this gay wedding of someone in my family or should I not? And he gave advice, and online Christendom had an aneurysm over the whole thing. So I've got my thoughts on Begg. I've got my thoughts on the reaction to it and what I think it should be, and I'm curious to hear yours. That comes up in the second half. But I have been, and it might have even been on the Memo Pod last week. I don't remember. I could go back and look, but it's not in front of me right now. I have written about recently the current state of affairs in our ongoing sexual revolution here in the United States, which is manifesting at this point in time with, it's funny, I remember being on the radio now years ago, and I would talk about the current sexual revolution. And I was saying, and it's manifesting itself right now in the form of gay marriage, that's the key push right now. Well, now we're off of that. And now we're on to the transgender craze is where we are. And I've written about recently how I think the revolutionaries who are part and parcel or leading this movement, that they went too far and too fast. And I don't think it endangers the long-term cultural conquest. I think they will eventually win the day in the West and all of the chaos that will come from it. I think all of that's still going to happen. But even though it hasn't hampered the long-term efficacy of their movement, I do believe that it has significantly damaged their credibility. It's hampered the speed at which they were conquering the culture. And this is the key, this is why it's worth talking about, it's provided Christians with what I would call a compelling opportunity to win back souls from the precipice of the abyss. Do I think we're going to win back the entire society and culture? No, I think once a genie is out of the bottle, you don't put him back in the bottle. You know, that's kind of where we are right now. But for Christians, our objective isn't to save a country. I mean, if that's a consequence of helping save souls by leading them to Jesus, well, that's great. That's a twofer. But our intent is to win souls from the precipice of the abyss. And I think right now, with what the transgender craze has done, I think it provides us an opportunity to expound upon and explain and to reason with and to teach the better way that God has for all of us. Along those lines, I was heartened. I was encouraged. I read a piece over at First Things. And First Things is like a publication that a lot of Christians would read, and certainly conservatives. The author's name was Dan Hitchens, and he spoke to this topic that I'm talking about with transgenderism and the push in society and all of that. In his piece, Hitchens' piece at First Things, he quotes this trans activist, one of the first transgender activists that there was. Jan Morris was the name that the guy went by. He quotes this guy explaining the origins of his own sexual confusion. Okay? This guy had written about it. He talked about it. And so Hitchens quotes him. And this is what Jan Morris had to say. Quote, "I was 3 or perhaps 4 years old when I realized I had been born into the wrong body, and I should really be a girl. I remember the moment well, and it is the earliest memory of my life." Okay, now I don't know what you think about all of that, but I want you to pay attention to the presuppositions that undergird that claim. To claim, "I was 3 or 4 years old, I was a boy, and I realized I've been born into the wrong body." Okay. In order to really believe that, you have to believe that there exists a real, unquestioned gender binary, that there is such thing as a male and there is such thing as a female. You don't say, "Well, I was a male, but I realized I was supposed to be a female," if you don't believe that there is such a thing called male and such a thing called female. If you don't believe that there is such a thing as a boy and a girl, then you don't say, "Well, I was a boy, but I felt like I should have been a girl." Follow me? So we know that Jan Morris is acknowledging that masculinity and femininity, that those are real things, that there is a divide, a separation, there is a difference, there is a uniqueness to the two separate and distinct sexes, boy and girl. And that distinction has to exist if it's going to be crossed. Crossing that distinction, that is the essence of transgenderism. Okay, transgenderism. Trans means crossing. You are crossing the genders. In order to cross the genders, well, there have to be genders. Like if I'm going to say that, we went on the Transcontinental Railroad. The trans means crossing what? The continent. The continent has to be there in order for you to cross it. So there has to be a gender distinction in order to be transgender. That's the underlying premise of Jan Morris's claim. You can either transgress it, which means violating that binary, or you can transcend it, which means you're going to move beyond that binary. But in either case, the binary has to exist. You follow me? By the way, I don't know if you can tell, but I get really worked up and excited about this stuff. Not about the confusion that people have and the mistakes and the sin that's harming them, but the fact that we can reason and make sense out of this because God is real, because He created us male and female, that those distinctions do exist, reality and biology and physiology, and it all bears that out, that God's fingerprint is stamped on all of this. And so when we engage it as Christians, we have a leg to stand on. We have a foundation point in which to make and to wage our arguments. And we make these arguments not in an effort to defeat someone else and drive them under the table and get them to submit to the superiority of our own intellect. No, we wage these arguments to set men free from the lies of Satan and of sin. And that's exactly what the transgender craze is built upon. Lies and deception. And our objective isn't to hurt anybody. That isn't our desire. Our desire and our objective is to free people with the truth. Now, Hitchens points out in his article, the one over at First Things, that though Morris said this, that he remembers being a boy and thinking he was supposed to be a girl, it's one of the first memories of his life, that isn't all that Morris wrote about, not in this book. Later in the same book, the man who became one of the first transgender figures to be publicly known and publicly celebrated, he made this eye-popping claim in this same work, quote, "There is neither man nor woman." There's neither man nor... So the same guy who said, I was a man, I was a boy, and realized I was supposed to be a girl, is now saying there is neither boy nor girl. If there is no boy or girl, how, as a boy, did you realize you were supposed to be a girl if those things don't exist? This is what happens when you abandon God. It's when you abandon rationality. The only foundation for rational thought is the existence of God. And once He's out of the equation in your mind, you get all mixed up and start making all of these arguments that contradict with themselves. And that's exactly what's happening. Now, Hitchens writes about this, and listen to what he says. This second narrative, this second idea that there is no man or woman, is one of radical doubt, he writes. One that asks whether maleness and femaleness are in fact real. It questions whether the kaleidoscopic diversity of human self-experience really can be squeezed into so restrictive of a binary. All of these different experiences people have, can we really boil it down to this is male and this is female? That's what Morris is arguing in this part of his work. He's saying, well, look, there is no man or woman. You can't condense it all into that. Hitchens goes on. It, what he's arguing, contends that language is always conditioned by the power structures of the day, that it rarely grasps life as it is actually lived, and it demolishes the born in the wrong body argument. That's the key. When you say there is no man or woman, then you cannot simultaneously say, well, I was born in the wrong body. What you mean when you say I was born in the wrong body is I was intended physiologically and intellectually and mentally and emotionally to be a woman, but for some reason I ended up in a man's body. Okay, if you say there is no man and woman, then you cannot say I was born in the wrong body because it doesn't matter. Bodies aren't assigned either male or female. Hitchens writes it this way. If the ultimate reality that exists, if it has no place for gender, if there's no place in the ultimate reality for male and female, then Morris's original epiphany was false when he said that he realizes that he was born in the wrong body. To realize that one has been born in the wrong body must be not a realization at all, because male and female bodies don't exist. Instead, it's simply an illusion. It's illusory. Okay, years ago, I had to read this guy in college. He's a theologian. He's a philosopher named Francis Schaeffer. And Francis Schaeffer called what's happening here with Jan Morris and what's happening in the transgender movement, called it a point of tension. That was Schaefer's way of describing the inescapable cognitive and intellectual wrestling matches that you are going to have with yourself if you depart from the absolutes that derive only from the Bible. When you abandon the authority of Scripture and the authority of God, you're going to argue with yourself in your own brain. That's going to happen. For instance, let me give you an example. To claim that all truth is relative, and which is what a lot of folks nowadays do, that there is no objective, absolute truth that governs all men in all places and at all times. Instead, you determine it individually, subjectively. When you claim that there is no truth, that claim in and of itself is a truth claim. It's self-contradictory. You are essentially saying there is no truth except for the truth that says there is no truth. Do you see how this works? That's a point of tension. Now, let's get to the heart of this. Should it be legal for foolish men to choose a rudderless life like that? Just to be adrift in a sea of moral confusion? Should it be legal? Sure. Yeah. People can make mistakes and people can make their own choices. The problem comes when the number of those men who are living rudderless lives, adrift in a sea of moral confusion, when the number of those men eclipses the number of men who still submit to a moral authority beyond our own passions, when that occurs and there's more of the confusion than there is the grounding, then it's no longer just an issue of isolated, individualized calamity. Now, these people can make their own choices, and if it ends up being a disaster, that's on them. Well, once there's a majority of them, it quickly becomes a societal catastrophe. And the issue of transgenderism, to me, is a prime case study. Notice how it is no longer good enough to simply permit an individual to self-identify and live the life that they prefer. That's what's said. You got to let me live the life. But it's never enough. No. They must be legally compelled to play along. And why? Listen to what Trevin Wax writes. If you refuse to acquiesce to someone's preferred pronouns, if you refuse to play the pronoun game with them, then you run afoul of the "I was born in the wrong body" argument, because you seem to be opposing something objective on someone's subjective experience. When I look at Bruce Jenner, who goes by Caitlyn now, and I say, "I'm not going to call you a she because you are a he," that's objective reality. The moment you do that, then you are running afoul of this, "Well, I was born in the wrong body," which is what Bruce Jenner believes. But when I take this route, it looks like I'm imposing an objective reality that they don't want because it conflicts with their subjective experience. However, Wax also points out, and this is why I wanted to mention it, that you're also running afoul of the "there is no male or female" narrative. Because if all reality is just made up in our language, then you not following the rules that everybody in society has established will keep the new theories from appearing true. You see how that works, right? Abigail Favali. Hang on. Had to get a drink. Favali, I think, is the name. By the way, you just saw that. That was not a product placement. I'm not getting paid by Smart Water. In fact, I would not buy Smart Water. It's water, and they charge you like $7 for it. I didn't buy that. I went with my wife for some tests that she had run, and it was like they had a fridge that you could just take them out of. So that was the only water that was available. I don't want to be judged by all of you. It's like Meijer or Walmart or Sam's Club brand water for us. And when did the bottled water thing take off? I mean, I remember as a kid filling up like the big thermoses with water out of our well at home and ice in it. So I had bottles in that sense, but like people buying cases of water was weird. And now we do it all the time. I don't know. But anyway, sorry, let me get back to this. Favale, I believe is how you say your name. It may be Favale, Favale, I don't know. So if I'm butchering it, I'm really sorry. Don't know how to say your name. Do know how to read her book, which was called The Genesis of Gender, A Christian Theory. Here's what she wrote. Listen, I think this actually, like Trevin Wax was making sense, but this puts it in very plain English. If gender identity only exists in our language, then our language must be manipulated, or else the whole thing falls apart. You get what she's saying, right? If there is a male and a female, and all of this stuff about there being other genders, a Z and a Zer and a, you know, whatever it is, the X's and all of that, that all of that stuff, it's just a reality that is linguistic. It's just something that we've made up. Then we have to manipulate the language. It has to be manipulated, or the entire thing is going to fall apart. That is what's at stake in the battle over pronouns. Our understanding of reality itself. And I'm going to tell you, in this current cultural moment where we are, I think Christians like me and like many of you, we are likely to experience this, and the only word I can come up with for it is bewildering. This bewildering feeling that somehow we're the only ones left to authoritatively believe and proclaim that God created us male and female. Like all of the other religionists, they're out. They're not going to play that game. It says something about their convictions, but they're not going to play the game. But Christians, we feel that way, that we're the only ones out there saying, no, male is male and female is female. God created us that way. I'm going to say to you that it's worse than just that. I'm going to say that at some point we're going to have to let it dawn on us that we're actually the only ones left who don't find in reality an enemy that needs to be defeated. That is the target right now of the current sexual revolution, the current culture war. It's a war for reality itself to be objective and defined. I know where I stand on that, and I'm hopeful that you do as well. Interested in your thoughts, Peter at peterheck.com. That's Peter at peterheck.com, or you can submit them below here on the email, or you can, I don't know what you can do. You submit them an email, or put them on the website. That's pretty much it. Yeah. I guess, yeah. Whatever. Okay, so listen, we got to take this break. And when we come back from that break, we've got Alistair Begg. Alistair Begg giving advice to a Christian grandmother, do I go to this family function that is a gay wedding? Or, as a Christian, should I not attend? Should I not? Because if I go, does that look like I'm putting my stamp of approval on a union that I know offends the heart of God? What should I do? And Begg gave this woman advice. And like I said earlier, online Christendom erupted. Outraged. So I want to tell you what I think about the outrage, as well as what I think about Alistair Begg and what he said and the advice that he gave. We'll do all of that for paid subscribers right after this. Those of you who are free, think about joining us today. You can do it for $8 a month or $10 a month, or you can just get $20 off and do it all once for the full year. I truly believe it would be worth your while. I really do. But you want to do that? Great. Then I'll see you in a few. If not, I'll see you next week. Paid subscribers, hang tight.
The Memo with Peter Heck.
Please patronize and thank all the sponsors of the Heck podcast, including McGonagall's Buick GMC, Terrell's Auto Service, Norris Insurance, Stevens Machine, Creative Financial Center, Indiana Right to Life, Trigreen Tractor, the Indiana Family Institute, Hartman Family Farms, Liberty Financial Group, the Wyman Group, and J. Watson Creations.